The National Broadcasting Company presents a summary of the latest news by H.V. Kaltenborn, noted news analyst. Mr. Kaltenborn.
Good evening, everybody. There is another new German air raid on British naval bases in the Orkney Islands, launched late tonight. Nazi bombers appeared over the islands shortly before midnight British time, and, according to the reports that have come in, dropped a certain number of bombs. Anti-aircraft guns went into action. The results of the engagement are not yet known. That's the sort of thing that's going to happen more frequently from now on. The Germans are several hundred miles closer to the Orkney Islands than they were 2 weeks ago. They've established their air bases on the point of Jutland. That's the extreme westerly projection of Denmark. And that's flat country, very available for air bases. And the Germans have now brought up their supplies, their planes, their gasoline, their repair crews, and they're starting off on their flight to the Orkneys from these points rather than from the much more distant German bases. And as a result, we must expect that these flights will become more frequent and probably be carried out by a larger number of planes. Britain reports to us tonight that there has been unprecedented air activity ever since the invasion of Scandinavia by the Germans began. And they claim that they have destroyed a total of some 300 Nazi planes during these weeks that the Scandinavian effort has been underway. Of course, it's to be remembered that most of them were destroyed while standing outside of hangars on such airfields as that at Stavanger and that at Oslo. And obviously, there, the bomber cannot be sure just how many he has destroyed. He estimates the number and is liable to give an excessive estimate. But there is no question that these successive raids on airfields like that at Stavanger, where the British have gone more than a dozen times, undoubtedly destroyed a number of planes. And also elsewhere in Norway, the Germans have not been able to build these underground hangars or to make certain that their planes were camouflaged or stowed away out of sight of the airplanes overhead. They have had to use the fields as they are. They're covered with snow and ice. As a result, the planes are clearly visible and a comparatively easy mark for the bomber who comes from overhead. And so it is quite probable that a great many planes have been destroyed during these Norwegian operations. But we must also remember that planes are being turned out in Germany at a rate of more than perhaps 1,200 a month, possibly as high as 2,000 a month. And that consequently, the destruction of some 300 in the course of 2 weeks of operations is not an irreparable loss, particularly if the planes alone have been destroyed, not with their crews. For it's much easier to build a plane than it is to train competent pilots to handle these warcraft, which are so difficult to manipulate because of the special features that warcraft are obliged to have in order to be effective in combat. But tonight's news is most important in its relation to Sweden. Sweden has been much in everyone's mind because obviously there is general expectation that sooner or later Germany will have to transgress against Sweden's neutrality in order to maintain her fighting forces in Norway. And tonight, a dispatch from Amsterdam to the London Daily Express declares that 8 divisions of German troops are massed in Memel and other East Prussia Baltic ports. That is the same line of report that we have had throughout today from various other sources. The massing of German troops in Baltic ports prepared, obviously, for some sort of landing operation. But, of course, it may be that they are embarking there on their way to Norway and not on their way to Sweden. Workmen are reported to be loading quantities of ammunition on supply ships in the Memel convoy. And it's also said that the Germans, who have been in possession of the Danish island of Bornholm, which is well inside the Baltic off the Swedish coast, that they have now turned it into a military and air base. And that's important news because Bornholm is located halfway between the German coast and the coast of Sweden and is ideally situated as a base for Germany in case she uses planes and ships against Sweden. The commander-in-chief of the Swedish Eastern Fleet, Admiral Lindskam, declared in Stockholm tonight that Sweden is entirely united and determined to fight if need be against any aggression. He remarks upon the calmness and the determination of the Swedish people. It was also announced in Stockholm today that Sweden is floating an internal loan for national defense purposes. The loan is to be for 500 million kroner, which is an enormous sum for this little country, particularly in view of the large sums that have already been expended for armament in preparation for the critical situation which confronts Sweden today. As to the fighting in Norway, Allied and German troops tonight are locked in battle on a narrow front north of the ruins of Steinke, which the Germans captured yesterday. This town is north of Trondheim. It's the town taken by the Germans to prevent the advance of the Allied forces from the north down towards the strategic city of Trondheim. There's a driving snowstorm in this area. It's piled adrift several feet deep in the valleys. It's interfered with German air operations, but of course, it's also made it difficult for land activity by troops to proceed. And since the Allies must now be on the offensive, must now continue to drive against the German forces in Trondheim, this weather condition handicaps them more than it does the Germans, who have established their defensive positions and only need to hold them. Neutral nations, like the United States and Belgium, are the only ones qualified to give advice when a war settlement is reached. That statement was made today by United States Ambassador to Belgium, John Cuddy. He was speaking at a luncheon attended by Premier Hubert Perrelot and the members of his Belgian cabinet. And Mr. Cuddy explained to these Belgian gentlemen that the United States sympathizes with their position. As United States Ambassador, he said, "I want to solemnly assure you that the United States and its people appreciate your neutrality and independence and can sympathize with you because our aim is the same. One thing links us today, our neutrality, when neutrality is not very popular. The only kind of a talk by a neutral which is popular with belligerents is the kind given by Mr. Cromwell in Canada. It was not violent, but it was not neutral. It resulted in a rebuke from our Secretary of State. Every American radio commentator who is heard in Canada nowadays displeases many of his listeners. He may be called pro-British at home, but Canadians call him anything but that. He is a neutral talking to neutrals, and as Mr. Cuddy indicates, neutrals are never popular with belligerents. But neutrals should be patient with such criticism. The passions of war do something to men's minds. They lose their balance, their sense of perspective and their fairness. We who still enjoy the blessings of peace can afford to be generous and cool-headed in accepting the not always generous criticism of those who are subject to the peculiar blindness that besets nations when they go to war. As to Mr. Cuddy's assertion that only neutrals will be qualified to give advice when the war ends, that will probably get him into considerable trouble with the belligerents. Their immediate reaction will be that only those who fight the war will have any say in making the peace. The answer is that those who fight the war will need gold, credit, foodstuffs, and raw materials to implement their peace. For without these, there can be only an unhappy truce, but no peace. To go beyond a mere armistice will certainly require the help of the neutrals. And to justify that help, the belligerents must grant neutrals a voice in making peace. If we had the whole text of Mr. Cuddy's speech, it is quite possible that he said something approximately like that. Keep it from Germany seems to be the rule these days. The Admiralty over in London announced today that 135 Danish ships have been detained in the United Kingdom ports since the German invasion of Denmark. These ships, whose tonnage totals 56,000, are to be used by the British for the duration of the war. Obviously, the Germans have seized a much larger part of the Danish merchant marine. The surprise invasion prevented the Danes from sending their ships out of Danish ports in time. The Norwegian merchant marine is many times larger, and a smaller proportion of it was in home waters. It is still to be determined how much of it the Germans will be able to retain and use. They are already employing many Norwegian ships in their Scandinavian transport operations. But keep it from Germany is also the watchword here in the United States for legislation designed to strengthen President Roosevelt's right to freeze all foreign securities and credits in this country to protect their lawful owners, won speedy approval of the House and Senate Banking Committees today. The action came after Secretary of the Treasury Morgenthau advocated such legislation. Senate Committee Member Carter Glass approved the measure, asserting he was, quote, one of those impossible persons who believes we should keep Germany from getting any property of invaded countries. Do it right if we can, do it wrong if we must, he told reporters. Well, Senator Glass, that doesn't sound neutral either. And, nevertheless, Congress will pass this legislation. The Germans won't like it, but we feel that when a country has been invaded and its property confiscated, that there is something to be said for permitting those who really own that property to freely dispose of it. A sharp difference of opinion has developed in England as the result of Alfred Duff Cooper's speech yesterday. He told the Society of St. George that Britain should cease to make any distinction between the German people and the Nazi government. The Manchester Guardian today rebuked the former British war minister. Will we find, the Guardian asks, at the end of this war, that there is no one in Germany to make peace with except criminals? Any peace made on that assumption would leave Europe and the world with a gloomy future. It would be shutting our eyes to the real and difficult problem of bringing the Germans back into their place beside other civilized peoples and working with them for the general good. If it were not wrong, the practical difficulties of treating Germany as if she were composed of 80 million malefactors are enough to make it impossible. That recalls Woodrow Wilson's distinction, which he endeavored to maintain even after we were in the war, between the German government and the German people. It is a distinction which many liberal minds in England and France will seek to maintain, but it's the kind of distinction that is difficult to maintain when a people's passions are aroused by war. Senator Bennett Clark today proposed legislation to prohibit Army and Navy officers from discussing important public issues without specific permission of department heads. He made his proposal after recommending court-martial of Rear Admiral Joseph K. Taussig, who you remember told the Senate Naval Affairs Committee that he believed war between the United States and Japan is coming. Of course, the Navy Department quickly announced that Mr. Taussig was voicing his own opinion and not that of the department. But we have numerous instances of indiscretions by military men. They usually occur in public speeches. But after all, Admiral Taussig was asked for his opinion by a congressional committee, and he gave it. Like most military and naval men, he went farther than was necessary to scare the committee and to secure big naval appropriations. The Navy is already getting about all the money that can be spent intelligently and carefully, but naturally the Navy wants still more. Army and Navy men are never satisfied. Perhaps they shouldn't be. Admiral Taussig said some things with which most experts agree, that we should strengthen our position in Guam and the Philippines. But he added that one thing which the administration hastened to disclaim, and that was what he said about conditions in the Far East. And yet, if he had said it only a little less forcibly with regard to the imminence of war, as he outlined the strategy of the situation, there was much common sense in that outline, and Americans will do well to consider it. Good night.
Thank you, Mr. Kaltenborn. You've been listening to a summary of the latest news by H.V. Kaltenborn, noted news analyst. Mr. Kaltenborn will again summarize the news over most of these stations at 7:15 New York time tomorrow evening. Here's a bulletin from the Associated Press, New York. Joe Jacobs, manager of heavyweight Tony Galento and a legendary figure in boxing circles for many years, died tonight. Jacobs would have been 44 years old May the 7th. This bulletin is from the Associated Press. This is the National Broadcasting Company, RCA Building, Radio City, New York.